Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, It's Electric, a Move to Electric Mobility, also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. We're hearing a lot about electric mobility these days, and that involves electric vehicles. And many experts think EVs will eventually replace gasoline-powered vehicles entirely, for everything from public transportation to everyday driving for all of us. What are the challenges, risks, and opportunities that lie ahead? Our guest today is one innovator in the field, focusing on wireless charging technology for electric vehicles. Jeremy McCool, founder and CEO of HEVO Power, that's H-E-V-O, which stands for Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Optimization. Jeremy, tell us a bit more about HEVO Power and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. HEVO is headquartered out of Brooklyn, New York, specializing in wireless electric vehicle charging technologies and software. The company was founded in 2011 while I was finishing my grad program at School of International Public Affairs at Columbia University. My focus was urban policy and sustainable development, and I wanted to put my effort into electric vehicle charging infrastructure. We created a program with NYU School of Engineering to co-develop the initial kernel technology that eventually became our world-class, fully approved, certified system that is being commercialized today here in Brooklyn, New York.
So how does your charger work? What makes it unique?
It uses electromagnetic resonance, which resonates on a special frequency. And so the vehicle pulls up and charges without cables.
So there's no plug-in involved with this.
That's correct. And what's unique about that is that it saves time, but also it can save cost on the long term.
What is in it for consumers, you think? You can expand a little bit on that, on what the advantages are.
Well, certainly convenience. One of the things about EV charging is that you often have to get out and plug in a place that has no security, or it's raining, or it's snowing, or it's icing, so you're out in the elements. And the other thing is just that when you think about the future of mobility, you can't think about it without thinking about autonomy at some point. And so an autonomous electric vehicle can charge itself without having to have somebody plug it in. Second part is cost. The cost of the system is equal right now to what you would see from a similar model of EV charging. But in the future, when we get to higher power systems, you'll see that be similar in terms of cost and even 20 to 40% cost savings there. And the final part of this, it enables other future technologies. So when we look at, you know, electric vehicle charging today, think of it as the mobile phone, cell phone type of industry of 15 years ago. People were carrying around very archaic, antiquated kind of phones. And then all of a sudden, the smartphone came. And even the smartphone was still not as equipped as it is today. So when we look at plug-in charging, we look at it as the 15 years ago form of cell phones. And then where we're going to next on our roadmap will take us into the next sphere of this.
So this is done with a smartphone, like there's an app on the phone. How does that work?
There's apps on the phone that enable the driver to be able to view things like parking alignment, be able to find stations, reserve stations, route plans, so that they don't have to think about where they're going to stop and charge at. You can select to go to a destination, and our app plans your entire route. It can also take into account traffic, weather, terrain. The big thing that it does is it helps the driver to align their vehicle into a space that has the wireless charging because it's in the ground. So you're not going to see it when you're pulling over it.
So these chargers are rather small. What are we talking about? How would we recognize them?
Well, the pad is 1 meter by 1 meter square by about 2 inches thick. It can be either surface mounted onto the street or embedded flush mounted seamless like a manhole cover. There's a pad that goes onto the bottom of the vehicle.
When can we expect to see wireless remote charging for regular drivers of electric vehicles?
around 2024, 2025, automakers, most of them don't want to be first movers. They want to be fast followers. Major automakers for 100 years have been traditionally petrol-based type of solutions, all of a sudden making these long-term type of announcements around electric vehicles. And they've never done that before. Ford has never forecasted what it was going to do 10 years from now. GM has never forecasted what it was going to do 10 years from now, but they have to. And there's a reason why. Tesla has taken all the air out of the room. And whenever you make an announcement about electric vehicles, they also see their stock price go up. So there is a positive reinforcement from market saying, yeah, that's what we want. Mm. And that's naturally starting to maneuver into how do we make charging better? Because that's where most of the polling that's come back from users has come back and said, hey, the vehicles are great. We love the performance. We hate the charging, and there's not enough of it. And to that point, the state of California, out of all their drivers that have purchased or leased electric vehicles in the last 5 years, 20% of them have gone back to petrol vehicles because of charging.
Are a lot of people, too, just regular drivers, are they just going to wait a long time? Or do you think that there are a lot of consumers that want to get in on the forefront, that they want to be the first in their neighborhood to have an electronic vehicle? How do you think that's going to evolve?
We're still in the very, very early phases, and they're all the innovative adopters who are the most earliest of adopters because they tend to be technophiles and they tend to have disposable income. So when we start to look at more mass adoption, what's required? First is being able to get EV charging. And when you look at major urban centers such as New York City, London, and these kinds of places, cities don't want to give up real estate. They don't want to give up curbside. They certainly don't want to do it by taking chances with something that can become a tripping hazard or a voltage hazard or something that ultimately just becomes messy and ugly. But what they require is to make sure that they have the public ready to be able to charge wirelessly. One way that we see that being able to become, we'll say, faster moving is by giving the vehicle side equipment to the customer at no cost. They can go get it installed by a trusted certified mechanic shop that's electric vehicle qualified so that they can get it onto their vehicles without any additional cost, because as soon as they have it on the vehicle, then they're going to want to use it.
So somebody who has an electronic vehicle already that has a plug-in type of system, they could switch to the wireless system. Is that right?
So they could actually just add on. They'd still have the plug-in charging, but they would have this new option for wireless charging.
So, Jeremy, how will HEVO make money? How will consumers pay for this?
We see a future that's more in the form of a subscription-based kind of environment where you're able to charge a flat price per month. And then if you use out-of-the-network, depending on what the out-of-network relationships that we have with other EV charging networks are, it's either included in that price or perhaps it's an extra $25 per month or something like that. We believe that in the very, very beginning of this, as we're launching right now, it'll be a traditional sales model, mostly again with fleets, but we want to transition quickly into a subscription base because more volume equals reduced cost on our supply chains, which increases our overall profitability. And the long-term revenue growth plan of the company is much more healthy with a subscription-based model than it is with a sales traditional model.
You're talking about fleets, where that would be a pretty valuable thing to get in on the ground floor, because that would give you a lot more cash to work with right off the bat.
That's right. We do know the game winner in this is supply chain management. So the more of the material that we can buy up front, the less that it will cost to build, the more that we can automate it, the less that it will cost to build.
As far as investors are concerned, what kind of companies are we looking at that would benefit from not only the services and products that you're providing, but just in general, the electric vehicle industry? What kind of companies do you think stand to benefit the most?
We have a lot of calls and interest and relationship building going on with the traditional petrol companies and architecture / infrastructure companies who are trying to figure out how they need to pivot and position themselves to be able to survive and thrive in this new advancing market. And they're not exactly coming up with great ideas, to be very fair and honest. Automakers have absolutely zero interest in having anything to do with the infrastructure side of the house, minus Tesla. Tesla's its own different animals and they operate differently. But when you talk to all the major automakers and you talk to all the tier one suppliers and everybody involved with that side of the house, they have no interest of being involved with EV charging infrastructure no more than they have wanting to be involved in gasoline cells and gas stations.
Right.
So when we look at who's at the most risk right now in this industry, it's the gas stations. Those individually owned franchisees are going to be the ones that are going to have to deal the brunt of the blow. They make their money on the convenience shops, not on the gasoline. Gasoline's so amortized down and they're constantly dealing with fluctuations and taxes that they get priced down to the point where it's just barely making any money for their business. They make money off of really the sales of all those little, you know, ding-dongs and ho-hos and everything that they sell inside the convenience shops. But if people aren't coming to those locations for the gasoline, then they're going to lose out on their ability to sell all these goods. So they need to transition now to a model that provides EV charging infrastructure. And what's great is that those kinds of customers, they're coming with vehicles that are going to be requiring 20 minutes to 60 minutes of charging. Well, now you've got your customer for 20 to 60 minutes, and you can bet they're probably going to come in and buy some stuff. And so the biggest problem and the hurdle that these industries have to face is shop slash gas station model that needs to now become a fueling model is that upfront CapEx. And the way to overcome that is having, we'll say, similar interest in the companies that they work with that can provide that equipment at no cost. They get a percentage. The company that owns and operates the equipment gets the larger part of that percentage. Then it allows them to be able to start servicing customers more adequately for plug-in charging or wireless charging. Second point, where you're going to see major upsides specifically to wireless charging is in the material manufacturing of core ingredients and materials such as ferrite, Litz wire, which is copper wire, steel, aluminum, and in most cases, polycarbonate. Those five materials make up 70 to 80% of wireless charging products. And then the third component of this is dealerships.
What about dealerships? Where do they figure into the equation?
Dealerships actually have a massive problem right now. They're not training their staffs to actually sell electric vehicles. There's been countless studies where people go in acting as a person desiring to buy or lease an electric vehicle, and the sales staff at the dealerships not only talks them out of trying to buy an electric vehicle, but will even refuse to show them electric vehicle options. Why? One is that they're not incentivized to do so because the margins on an electric vehicle aren't the same as a gasoline vehicle. Two, selling gasoline vehicles means maintenance. Maintenance means money. And with electric vehicles, maintenance is reduced 70 to 90% on the lifetime of the vehicle. So they're not going to have auto mechanic shops constantly rolling vehicles in the way that they used to have with gasoline vehicles and oil changes and, you know, all these things. And so they're going to have to come quickly and adopt into things like wireless charging and other options that help to either improve the performance of the vehicle somehow or give the customer other options. Because after that, there's not much maintenance other than the tires being turned and windshield wiper fluid being refilled. So there's three industries that are being shaken up pretty hard right now. One's got the all upside, which is the materials and supply market. They're going to do quite well. But dealerships and of the gas station franchisees, that's where you're going to see some real challenges. And that's where you're going to see new models and new opportunity.
Would it actually be possible, maybe this is a silly question, but would it actually be possible to turn a gas-propelled vehicle? Would it be possible to make it to adapt to your type of technology, to wireless technology?
You can take almost any gasoline-powered vehicle today and transition it to an electric vehicle. There's a cost to that, and there's certainly a lot of companies out there specializing in that transformation, and then that vehicle could become wirelessly enabled without a problem. You bring up a really good point here, Pat, which is there's over a billion gasoline vehicles, and there's going to be hundreds of millions more before we have a full transition to electric. Hundreds of millions more, if not even a billion more gasoline vehicles by the time that happens. What do you do with all those vehicles?
No.
It would be smart to figure out a way to reuse them and put batteries on those vehicles and put electric motors in those vehicles. And if you do that, then you have to have a charging option, and you can do wireless or plug-in or wireless and plug-in. So
yeah, because one of the whole things behind this is to have a cleaner environment to fight climate change. So it would be great if you could turn some of those traditional polluters into something that's positive.
There's quite a bit of companies specializing in retrofits. You predominantly see it with fleet-related vehicles, so box truck, semis, and buses. But there's nothing to be stated that that couldn't one day become a dealership slash automaker model, where you bring the vehicle into a dealership, they drop the engine block, they drop down everything, and somehow figure out a way to retrofit a battery pack and an electric motor to it. Why not?
We're talking with Jeremy McCool, founder and CEO of Hevo Power, which develops wireless charging technology for electric vehicles. Another thing we've touched on certainly here is the convenience factor and how long it takes to charge an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
Will that improve? And also just having a charging station in your home, will that happen more often as time goes on?
Already states like California have adopted in requirements of a percentage of new home builds and residences. As I saw of late, was 20% of all new build and residences have to have EV charging. At some point, it's going to become 100%. In Europe, you're seeing much more aggressive kind of standards. Asia, Hong Kong slash China. So government is going to have a hand in all that. To a degree, you could also argue consumer will require it. You have to have charging at every home, and it's not hard. It's very easy to install a simple 208, 240 volt, single phase, 50 amp line in any traditional home, or especially a new build. But when you're looking at the current environment, the thing about faster charging that's not fully realized is the capital nature of being able to do it is significant. You want to be able to charge at a coffee shop in 5 minutes when you go in and get your latte and walk back out to the car and be able to pick up 50, 60, 70 miles, right? So that's the game. In order to do that, the cost is going to be in hundreds of thousands of dollars per station. You got to get the city power or the local grid service to come out, upgrade, put a transformer in. Then you got to run cabling and line, which is very thick and costly. And then at the end of the day, you got to buy the equipment that can deliver that power safely. So there is a lot of challenges to the stop and fast charge type of method, because there's just really no ROI.
ROI, you mean return on investment?
That's right. In the state of New York, New York Power Authority is installing hundreds of DC charging stations downstate and upstate. But they don't predict any ROI ever, because in order for them to get to break even, they'd have to have probably hundreds of thousands of charges on those stations over a period of 5 years, which is just, it's not feasible. Where wireless charging comes in that can overcome that challenge is that it allows the vehicle to drive and charge at the same time. That is a very important point.
Wait a minute, drive and charge at the same time? How would that work?
Long range freight is where you're going to see the first adopters of this kind of technology. It's going to be in HOV lanes or in the truck lanes along major interstates and freeways and highways. It'll only be every, say, 10 miles, and there'll be a 1 mile long strip under the pavement, under the asphalt. You're not going to see it. But in that 1 mile, that vehicle is going to pick up 10 to 20 miles of extra charge.
Wow.
Now, you do that in mass with commuter locations such as like San Jose to San Francisco, New York, you know, these kinds of locations then become evident for consumer and passenger electric vehicles. The commuter can get the same benefit using an easy pass system. That is a net benefit to everybody, the driver, because they don't have to stop and charge somewhere, to whoever owns that site in terms of the ownership of that freeway, highway, interstate, because they're going to make money vis-a-vis the easy pass tollway bay system. And also to the energy company. It's much easier to handle these kinds of locations where you're not dealing with a lot of major urban dense areas. Once you put that equipment into the ground, there is really no case to say that that equipment ever has a spoil date, meaning that replacement cost. We've seen models that show 20, 50 years without any replacement at a minimum. With this kind of technology in mobile charging, while driving, these technologies are about saving the planet, right? The only way to do that realistically is that the power has to come from a sustainable source. If it's coming from mixed grid, if, for God's sake, if it's coming from coal, we're doing the planet worse damage. You only get that when you have solar, wind, and other, you know, hydro and other renewables that are responsible for the generation of that power. Otherwise, it can have actually a net negative on environment.
How long do you think this is all going to come about for electric vehicles become more popular than gas-powered vehicles?
This company was started in 2011, and that was at the forefront of even electric vehicles becoming something that people were talking about, often mocked. And it survived through a lot of different moments. In the early aughts, it was the dot-com bust, and then companies like Solyndra giving heartburn to investors regarding clean technologies. You had, obviously, the global recession of 2008, and yet electric vehicles survived it all. 10 years ago, trying to tell people that the world needed wireless charging for electric vehicles was about as far out there as you could possibly get. Now that we're here, the best performing industry in all of NASDAQ, beating out S&P and everybody, is EV charging infrastructure company. How about that? And right behind it, electric vehicle manufacturing companies. It will probably be at the term of the second half of this decade that it just becomes obvious, meaning everybody either has one or they're going to buy their next vehicle is going to be an electric vehicle. But still, electric vehicles are 20 to 40% more expensive than their direct competitors on the ICE vehicle side. That will come down through a couple of different things. Battery costs have come down 80, 90% over the last decade already. They can still come down a bit more. Cost of energy is going to come down even more, making the total lifetime cost of the vehicles even less, especially as more renewables come online. Third thing, the cost of charging equipment is either going to become cheaper or it's not going to cost anything. Final part of this is that as we advance, the countries that have not yet adopted in and won't adopt over the next 5 to 7 years won't have to go through the shortcomings of being early adopters.
Let's get back to the supply chain issue for a moment. Electric vehicles, batteries, charging stations, there are a lot of components involved. How difficult is that to manage with the availability, shortages, and other issues? It seems like it would be monumental.
One of the biggest challenges the industry are facing right now is on the chip side. I've seen net 60 months of requirement of orders for certain types of chips if you want to have a supply over the next 3 to 5 years. You may not even see those kinds of supplies come in for 1 year plus because of the amount of demand, A, due to COVID-related matters, where they've had downsizing and it's become an actual challenge to hire people back. And then there's been a lot of problems around actually getting the material from Asia to the US specifically and around the world, where we've seen slowdowns of several months. And that's going to continue to be the case. There's no slowdown. We've heard in some of the materials that we deal with that have gone up 200, 300 fold, that they will stabilize at 100% over original cost 18 months ago. So they're going to be double the cost. These kinds of realistic issues are happening across all the automotive supply chain and the charging infrastructure supply chain. Around the battery technology, cobalt is one of the most fiercely fought after materials required to be able to make batteries. They don't always come out of the easiest places to get, often falling into locations where you even have labor-related issues and health-related issues because of how they extract that from the earth. Lithium is in an abundant supply, but it's the other materials that goes into a lithium-ion battery pack because they are a bit more rare earth kinds of materials. So you've got that plus titanium and a couple of other materials that become more rigorous and robust in terms of manufacturing over the next decades. And you start to see where your supply chains will have opportunities for investment. On things like tires, these vehicles weigh usually double, if not more, than the conventional vehicle. People go through tires more often. So expect to see tires becoming a sought after industry in terms of material science and focus, especially from some of the big manufacturers out there, such as Michelin and the other ones here. Finally, when we think about where investment should be going, we think about our basic materials on the charging infrastructure side: copper, ferrite, polycarbonate, steel, aluminum. Those things are 70-80% of all the products, whether they're plug-in charging or they're wireless charging. The interesting thing about these kinds of industries, as far as we know, there are no new plants that will be manufacturing more ferrite or that will be manufacturing more steel. So we have to see how the industry adapts. I would say that you'll see investment being a focus for those kinds of materials in the infrastructure side.
Is the market getting too far ahead of itself from an investor standpoint?
It is a very hot market because at the end of the day, retail investors want it. There will be likely a bit of a stabilizing that will be more natural to the rules of the game of public markets, but the markets are speaking very directly. If that means companies that were once not able to get private investment can come to a public market and get that investment, that's maybe the way that the world is going to have to formulate around electric vehicles, because private investment isn't moving that fast. And so, yes, it's fast-paced, but that's what makes it exciting.
Jeremy, where can our listeners find out more about EvoPower?
You can always find us at evopower.com. We're quite active also on LinkedIn. The best thing I would say, if you want to find out more about Evo, is to also come visit. If there's something of interest from more of an investment term, we're open to now receiving visitors. So we're back and open for business, fully vaccinated, ready to receive folks and guests to come see it in person.
And your headquarters are in Brooklyn, correct?
We are a very Brooklyn company.
Okay. Okay, Jeremy, thanks so much for being with us today. It was really interesting.
Thank you, Pat, and looking forward to seeing this on the other side.
Okay. We've been talking with Jeremy McCool, founder and CEO of Evo Power, which develops wireless charging technology for electric vehicles. You can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus, and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.